Hello and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about pho.
Yes, pho. And I am someone who mispronounced it for many, many, many years.
I was real lucky to be introduced to it by my friend Kate, who is Vietnamese. And so she said it the right way the first time that I had it. It was pretty inevitable that I was going to pronounce it correctly.
And you went through a bit of a pho phase, yes?
Yes, one might say that. After that first pho, which was down in Tampa, St. Pete area, I think, on a road trip, pretty soon after that, a Vietnamese restaurant opened up basically across the street from my apartment in college, and it was over. I was just like, well, this is the best thing, and I can get it all the time, and why would I eat anything but pho?
Well, I'm not sure, Lauren, but I unfortunately don't get it too often just because it is sort of far away.
Yeah, most of the good spots in town are a little bit far up Beaufort Highway.
But. Yeah. Yeah, I used to, my parents would visit us in our old office in Buckhead and on Fridays, and I made it kind of a mission to introduce them to food that they really could have cared less about. I was trying to widen their palate. And I took them to somewhere on Beaufort Highway, Chef Lee's.
Lee's Bakery.
Yes, Lee's Bakery. There's Chef Lou's. Is that what I'm thinking of?
Oh, that's a possibility,
there's
too.
There's a lot of them.
Number of amazing Vietnamese places. There's actually another really good one. This is totally Atlanta inside baseball. Sorry, guys. But there's another really good Vietnamese restaurant in the same plaza as Lee's Bakery, called Colm. And yeah, they've got amazing grilled food.
Oh.
I super recommend it.
Colm was on my list because I had a list of all the international places I wanted to take them to. And I still have it because I always make lists. And
it might have been a different Colm than the Colm that you were planning on taking to them to, because there's one, or there was one around your neighborhood. But anyway.
Anyway. All of this to say, we're talking about pho today.
Yes.
Yes. So let's start off with our I was going to say annual, but that's not what it is at all. It could be our annual pho question. What is it?
Pho is a Vietnamese noodle and soup dish that is served hot, featuring thin, flat rice noodles in a transparent broth, frequently flavored with a rich and aromatic stuff like beef meat and bones, onion, ginger, fish sauce and soy sauce, and then a bunch of spices, cinnamon, star anise, coriander, cardamom, and cloves. And it's typically topped with slices of rare beef immediately before serving. And sometimes served alongside a tray of fresh herbs, lime wedges, hot peppers or sauces, and other toppings and seasonings so that every diner can customize their bowl. And the result of all of this is this really warming soup and noodle dish with kind of spiced floral notes that's filling without feeling heavy.
Mm-hmm. And pho is known as the national dish of Vietnam. It used to be more of a breakfast food in Vietnam anyway.
Perhaps specifically northern Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. But nowadays, it can be and is eaten any time of day.
Oh, yeah.
Still, the go-to place could be sold out by 9 a.m., and it is seen as a dish for the working people.
For everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andrea Nguyen, who wrote the James Beard Foundation Award-winning The Pho Cookbook, wrote, "Pho is so elemental to Vietnamese culture that people talk about it in terms of romantic relationships. Rice is the dutiful wife that you can rely on, we say. Pho is the flirty mistress that you slip away to visit."
Oh, had no idea.
Yeah.
Dear me.
The noodles typically used are a specific type, ban pho. So pho is both the soup and the noodles.
And around the world, pho has been adapted to a lot of whatever you can imagine, almost, whatever ingredients are available.
Yeah, you've got chicken broth pho, pork broth pho, vegetarian broth pho, pho served with any number of cuts of beef, depending on the cut, either pre-cooked in the case of like brisket, tripe, tendon, meatballs, or raw or rare so that it cooks in the bowl right in front of you. In the case of something like flank steak, or with slices of pre-cooked chicken or pork or seafood or vegetables, the garnishes can be just about anything. Vegetables like bean sprouts or thin sliced white onions or green onions, fresh hot peppers, herbs like Thai basil, mint, cilantro or culantro, seasonings like hoisin sauce, fish sauce, lime wedges, chili sauce or oil. For the purists, like, they're like, oh, nah, none of that.
Yeah. What, did you have a favorite?
Oh, I like the rare beef with a little bit, depending on the place, a little bit of brisket or tripe or both. Mm-hmm. And bean sprouts, jalapeno slices, lime, and maybe a little bit of chili oil. You don't want to ruin the broth.
No, that's a travesty.
Yeah, it's so delicate and nice, simple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. we tried to find some numbers, but numbers are hard to come by, at least for, well, in general, but also specifically in the U.S., because there is a database keeping track of how many pho restaurants there are. I'm not sure where the numbers are coming from, but according to this website, Houston had the most pho restaurants in the U.S. as of 2009. But if we go state level, California is by far in the lead. By, like, there's nothing even, if you're looking
even
at the graph, nothing close at all. So it has seen a lot of growth.
Sure.
And it is becoming more common in places that aren't big cities. Which is cool because it is delicious.
Oh, yeah.
But it is still, it's a bit smaller than I thought it would be, honestly, in the U.S.
In terms of nutrition, American bowls of pho are about like 30% larger than most bowls served in Vietnam. Just by the way.
I am not surprised.
Me neither. And other than that, okay, like it for all of those things that we just listed that can be possibly included in this soup, you know, nutrition-wise, it's really dependent upon what you put into it and how much you eat, because there's no standard, like, serving of pho except for, like, the capacity of your stomach.
I just went to a place imagining just how much pho that could be for me.
It looked like a lot. You looked a little bit afraid of yourself.
Yeah. A little worried and concerned I might take that as a challenge later.
Oh, no. Oh, okay. Well, moving on. The basic broth and noodle and a little bit of meat combo is pretty low in fat and high in protein, carbs, and salt. So it'll fill you up and keep you going. But picking your toppings wisely can make or break the caloric bank, if that's a thing that you're concerned about.
Yeah, I'll say it is. It's usually more filling than I expect it to be when I first look at it. So that's good. Hopefully. I'm already thinking as if I'm going to do this later. I need to make better choices in my life.
Well, I mean, you know, people are big into bone broth these days, and this is essentially bone broth with some, you know, rice noodles and beef.
Sure.
It's a health food.
It's a health food. You can turn anything into a health food. I am convinced of that if you want it hard enough. Okay. So that's the basics of pho.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a lot of history, a lot of pretty interesting history.
Yeah, recent history. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Pho's got a mysterious past with unknown origins. And a lot of the early history is oral, so difficult to find on the not-oral, mostly not-oral, internet.
Right, yes. Some historians do think that pho, or a soup very much like it, was kicking around in small villages in the countryside in what is currently Vietnam, specifically in the village of Vang Khu, like long, 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 long before it moved into the cities and got popular and spread.
Yes. And it's most likely tied to France.
Oh, yeah. Though this pho-like soup was probably enjoyed before French colonization, the method of charring your onion and ginger before you add it to the broth was probably French-influenced.
And some speculate the word pho itself is a derivation of the French word for fire, pho, possibly spun off from French beef stew, pot au feu. Fire here denotes the long time the pot spent over flames, not spice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The name Alexandre de Rode comes up a lot in this discussion. He was a Frenchman who developed a translation of Vietnamese written language to a Latin alphabet. And also, pan de mi, banh mi. Mind blown. I never thought about it.
De Rhodes was working on this translation in the 1620s through the 1650s as part of an early missionary effort for the French Catholic Church in Vietnam. Previously, Vietnamese had been written in a variation on Chinese characters. But through missionary and monetary and military intervention, the area was colonized and conquered by France over the next couple hundred years.
In the north, you have Phu Bắc, and in the south, you have Phu Nam. More on how that came to be in a moment. And I am, I just hope everyone appreciates the restraint of not making pun after pun after pun. It's a real effort I'm putting in.
It's a physical effort. I'm watching her do it right now.
Yes. A lot of things had to come together to make pho, and probably a lot of these things came together near Hanoi. For as long as Vietnam has existed, the center of power has been Hanoi. And that didn't change when France took over Vietnam and incorporated it into French Indochina. From 1908 to 1910, Henri Auger, a colonial administrator, commissioned a multi-volume collection of art to capture what life was like in French Indochina. And one of the pieces depicts a pho vendor. And one thing here is that before the French arrived, the Vietnamese people in the north didn't slaughter cows. Or they did, but not that often, because beef was expensive and most people couldn't afford it, and also because cows were used in rice patties.
French tastes would begin to change that, but the French generally only wanted particular cuts of beef.
Right. And since money was scarce, the Vietnamese didn't want to waste the bones and other parts of the cow that the French would throw away, and one of the ways they'd use it is by boiling it. One version of the story is that the butchers had to sell beef super cheaply because the locals weren't really buying beef because they didn't have a taste for it. And street vendors saw an opportunity to swap out the more expensive water buffalo meat in their soups. At first, the soup was mainly popular with the Chinese in Vietnam, but by 1930, you could find the dish in pho shops all over Hanoi.
And that Chinese population in Vietnam were also a huge influence on pho, because in the meanwhile, pho was evolving. The Chinese five-spice type spices were commonly added by the 1920s, and rare beef slices rather than just straight-up boiled beef by 1930.
Mm-hmm. And here's another story of maybe how pho got its name.
Oh, yeah.
And it has to do with competitive street hawkers. The Vietnamese name for beef and noodle soup took too long to call out, so vendors shortened it to pho, possibly because fun, which is sort of what it should have been shortened into, misheard or mispronounced, means excrement.
Ah.
So yes, I can see how you would want to avoid shouting that out when you're trying to get someone to buy food. So pho showed up in a Vietnamese language dictionary in 1930, whatever the case may be.
And all of this that we're talking about is what has come to be known as Phu Bắc, which is traditionally just broth, noodles, and a bit of meat for the topping. The emphasis of the dish was, and for lots of folks still is, on the clarity and the flavor of the broth and the sort of contrasting chew of the noodles and the beef. It's a preparation that's revered for its simplicity.
Yes. And here we come to a bit of government interference that led to some pho changes and
yes.
Innovations, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on who you ask. But first, we're going to stop for another quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. In 1939, probably due to a government restriction prohibiting the sale of beef on Mondays and Fridays, to make sure not too many draft animals were killed for food, chicken was added to the pho pot, and it caused quite the outcry. Many people called it fake pho. Faux pho, if you will. But eventually, the hullabaloo blew over, and people accepted chicken pho as a preparation. And as a form of protest to French occupation, poet Thu Mo wrote an ode to pho in 1934. And here is a bit of it translated. Don't downgrade pho by labeling it a humble food. Even the city of Paris has to welcome pho. Compared to other international foods of note, it is delicious, yet inexpensive, and is often crowned the best. Living in this world without eating pho is foolish. Upon death, the altar offering should include it. Now go savor pho, or you shall crave it. He is correct. Now I crave it.
Oh, yeah.
Gonna have to go savor it.
This is one of my serious cravings episodes.
Oh, absolutely. To Beaufort Highway! But first, back to Vietnam in the past. The French lost control of Vietnam to Japan during World War II, although the French administrators were allowed to remain. A little after the war ended, Vietnam split into North and South Vietnam. Hanoi remained the capital of communist North Vietnam, while democratic South Vietnam made Saigon its capital. Thousands fled from the north to the south, bringing with them their recipes for pho. Ingredients were more readily available in the south, and the southern Vietnamese started adding some of these ingredients to pho. So the southern Pho Nam was born with the addition of herbs as garnish and bean sprouts, a bit more hoisin and fish sauce.
And a little bit of rock sugar.
Mm-hmm. The 1950s were a tumultuous time for Hanoi and North Vietnam at large, and pho was no exception to this. The Communist Party was nationalizing businesses. The USSR sent aid, including potato starch and wheat flour, and pho was restricted by the government as it was seen as a waste of rice. But you could still find some of the real deal if you knew where to go. From Xuân Phong's Ao Yai, My War, My Country, My Vietnam, little by little, the rules were overlooked. To deceive controllers, the street merchants placed a small basket of those shriveled up noodles on display. But the pho, the real stuff, was underneath. It was almost as good as it had used to be, and hardly more expensive than the substitute. We all passed on our list of secret addresses. I would like a bowl of soup with potato flour noodles, we would say out loud, just in case any state officials were hanging around. The merchant would understand immediately. But then the pho had to be downed very quickly to keep the unfortunate man or woman from having his or her equipment seized, as well as a fine to pay. And apologies to any Vietnamese words that we were butchering.
Yeah. Oh, we're trying. We've looked them up.
Yes.
I promise.
Yes. There is a look of sincerity and fear in Lauren's eyes.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
The Chinese and the USSR threw their support behind communist North Vietnam, and the U.S. put their support behind South Vietnam in what became the Vietnam War, lasting from 1963 to 1973, eventually ending with 1975's fall of Saigon. During that time, a seven-table restaurant called Pho Binh, or peace noodles, literally, served as the base of operations for a Viet Cong spy cell. Since meat was scarce, pho at the time often came without it and was called pho without a pilot. And this was a reference to the U.S. drones photographing North Vietnam. Not only that, it was often served with a baguette and cold rice, but also fried breadsticks that did become a pho tradition in the city. With the fall of Saigon, Vietnamese left their country in droves, spreading across the globe, and many made their home in the United States. And many others still became boat people for over 15 years. And pho spread with the Vietnamese. Most of the refugees were from South Vietnam.
Or had been from South Vietnam since the 1950s when they were refugees from North Vietnam.
Exactly. And this made the Southern-style Vietnamese pho the more well-known of the two. Pockets of Vietnamese immigrant communities started opening Vietnamese restaurants with pho on the menu, introducing it to a larger audience. And now you can get instant pho.
I've definitely made that at home.
I have as well.
There's also all kinds of iterations of pho out there. There's like pho, cold noodle salad, deep fried pho noodles, fresh pho spring rolls, pho fried rice. There's a pho cocktail.
Ooh. I'm very intrigued by a pho cocktail.
I couldn't figure out what was in it, but...
It exists.
It exists, and I want to drink one.
Yeah. I feel like that'd be sort of a Bloody Mary-type savory drink, maybe?
Ooh, yeah, like a bone broth cocktail?
Ooh.
Ah.
Oh, man. Okay.
Well, you just went to another place.
I know. This episode has been full of places, full of pho and mispronunciations of pho.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned for at least one of those after.
Oh, boy.
After this next bit, which is
Listener Mail. Nice. I'm conducting an orchestra of one. Sometimes it works.
Sometimes it's like, yes.
Well, you know, that's part of the journey. That's part of the fun.
It is.
Kit wrote in, I just listened to your hot dog episode the other day and wanted to write in. I know you were focused on American traditions for the 4th of July, but wanted to let you know a bit about hot dog culture in other parts of the world. I'm an American expat living in Edinburgh, Scotland, where I'm a postgraduate studying applied psychology, with a bit of behavioral economics thrown in. I'm also an amateur drink historian and mazer, aka mead brewer. But what drew me to finally write in was hot dogs. You see, while hot dogs are a thing in America, they're weirdly misunderstood here in the UK. I had to grin upon hearing your episode because I had just witnessed the special Taste of America end cap in my local grocery store, which featured a variety of, quote, American foods for the not celebrated here holiday. While the American-style pancakes and pancake syrup were funny enough, it was the cans upon cans of hot dogs that get me every time. That's right, canned hot dogs. Here in the UK, hot dogs come either jarred or tinned, not in cryopacks as in the States. They're often made with chicken instead of pork or beef, and they're almost always branded as American-style, even though they're a bit alien to most Americans. If you want a true hot dog here, you have to head for a Polish grocery store. But there are other parts of the world that really put the USA to shame when it comes to hot dogs. The Danes eat the most hot dogs per capita in the world, and they really know how to make them. At every street corner and many shops, you can get a big, plump hot dog with your choice of up to a dozen sauces, including remoulades. My favorite has always been curry ketchup, served up on a fresh-baked baguette or a crusty bun and topped with crisp fried onions, if you like. And remarkably, one of the best hot dog experiences you'll find is at 7-Eleven. They're using fresh local ingredients and topping your hot dog to order.
What?
It's a wonderful, inexpensive lunch for a student or just on your lunch break from work. In Norway, hot dogs are often taken to picnics held in a thermos full of hot water and served rolled up in thin potato crepes called lefse. I probably mispronounced that. Apologies. Also, delightful with curry ketchup. Just thought you might like a little international culinary tour of hot dogs. Yeah.
Yes.
There were pictures involved, and I loved the American-style pancakes really cracked me up with the syrup. It's funny. I'm sure, like, we do the same thing. It's kind of hilarious how when we're like, try this American-themed thing. And Americans are like, what is
that? That is not a thing. What thing?
How do we eat this thing? My hot dog's in a can. Be outraged.
Alexandria wrote, I love your show, and it really makes my hour-long commute every day much more enjoyable. Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed the Cotton Candy podcast last week and have my own stories of selling concession in high school marching band, though thankfully we did not have a cotton candy machine. However, I was surprised there was no mention of Dragon Beard candy. Dragon Beard candy is a hand-pulled sugar floss dusted in rice flour and wrapped around a filling, traditionally coconut, peanut, and sesame, but now you can find modern fillings as well, like chocolate, Rice Krispies, freeze-dried fruits, and even Pop Rocks. During a stint teaching English in Japan right after college, I took advantage of my close proximity to travel in Asia and saw this candy in both Taiwan and Korea. In Taiwan, I just saw the prepackaged version, which I purchased as omiyage to bring back to my coworkers. However, in Korea, I got to see a street vendor make some fresh. The process is amazing, and I definitely recommend watching a video.
It is really cool.
Yeah.
A lot of people wrote in about this. I think I'd never seen the process of it being made, but the more I think about it, I think I did have that.
Oh, yeah?
When I was in Asia. Because it's
cool.
Like,
sort of like a little like bird's nest looking thing, maybe?
Yeah. I think I just didn't realize that was cotton candy. It was good. I liked the filling. I enjoyed it more than cotton candy here, perhaps.
I think you enjoy most things more than cotton candy here.
I do appreciate everyone who wrote in outraged on my behalf. That was awesome. I'm going to forward these emails to my old band director. See?
See? How dare you have?
How dare you? And Well, yeah. He would probably be like, who are you?
Who are you? What? What?
Even though the band only had 30 people. All right. Getting riled up again.
You are. You are. Okay. It's going to be okay.
Thanks to both of them for writing in. If you would like to write to us, we would love to hear from you. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at foodstuffhsw, also on Instagram at foodstuff. We do hope to hear from you. Thank you, as always, to our amazing super producer, Dylan Fagan, who might be Kylo Ren. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
In the north, you have pho bak, and in the south, you have pho nam. And more on how that came to be and what that meant in a moment.
You definitely just said pho.
Pho!